Hey, welcome in, everybody. Fat Tony is here with me. Mike Dempsey here, live from Everbank Jaguars today. Jeff Loggeman coming up. What are you grinning at over there already?
No, I had a thought right as we were coming back, and I'm going to look at the numbers because we're obviously going to get into Jason Babin being released by the team earlier
this
morning.
Did that happen?
That happened, and we'll talk about that. But I was looking at the all-time sack numbers in Jags history,
which
is always a fun list to go to. And
tell me Jason Babin is not top five on the all-time sack list.
No, he's not top five.
Crazy
he's,
like that.
He was, I think, 20th.
All right, well, that's more reasonable.
20th all-time with 9 sacks and a Jaguar uniform in 21 games.
9 sacks gets you into the top
right.
20.
That's not the number that I was kind of chuckling at. I was like, okay, so if you took, going into this morning, the top 5 sack men active on the Jacksonville Jaguars roster, do you think you could tell me the 5 leading sackers for the Jags active on the roster
you mean
as of this morning?
Active as a leading sackers with the Jaguars?
With the Jags.
So we throw Chris Clemens right out the window.
Right. These are guys that have done it in a Jaguar uniform. Babin was second.
Now that he was second.
Yes, there's one player on the roster that has more sacks.
All right, I'm going to say, what am I looking for, the top 5?
Top 5.
Pop quiz right out of the gates?
Yes.
This is a reversal of fortune pop quiz. I usually like giving these to you. I'm going to go Tyson Alualu.
He leads the active roster.
Ding, 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 ding.
With 11.
Woo! I am killing it.
That is good enough for 17th all-time.
17th all-time. I'm going to go with Paul Posluszny.
Posluszny,
playmaker.
7, is tied for 3rd on the Jags.
So I have. There's no one higher than Posluszny, then, if I'm reading you correctly. Other than
there's one other player who has the same number, 7.
That I mentioned. All right, let us look here, and we go through the mental Rolodex. I'm going to get top 5. I'm going to say Sindarik Marks.
Sindarik Marks is 5th.
Yes!
On the team right
this
now.
This is tremendous work getting done right here, ladies and gentlemen.
4 sacks.
Oh, Andre Branch, the Brancher.
And Branch is 3rd. With 7.
So did I kill it all? I crushed it?
That's the top 5, and beyond that...
Including Babin.
Including
right.
Babin.
Okay.
And beyond that, I think there's 2 or 3 guys that have
one. I'm
going to
go Will Blackman.
Will Blackman has 1.
I know he has 1.
Yeah.
Because he took it to the house.
Yeah,
so.
I think beyond that, there are a couple guys on the roster that have 1 sack, but that's your current leading sack man, Jacksonville.
I feel very proud of myself, Tony.
Tyson Alualu.
Woo! Tyson. Good job. good job living up to that draft status.
Yeah.
And hey, he leads the team better than not leading the team,
that's
I suppose, in that category.
And he's only a sack and a half behind the guy we got coming in studio today. Jeff Loggeman with 12 and a half.
Oh, Alualu is walking him down. This is tremendous. This is going to be a milestone event when Tyson goes past Jeff Loggeman at some point, Tony. But Jason Babin does get released today.
He does.
And from what we're told, look, there's no mystery. There's no secret anything involved in this. Jason Babin's 34 years old, okay, and despite leading the team in sacks last year, he is an aging player. You've got a lot of young guys that they felt like they really addressed that unit, the defensive line as a whole, defensive tackle and built up the depth. And how many times can Gus Bradley talk about the job that Andre Branch is doing this offseason? We saw Chris Smith have a really nice practice yesterday. That was one of the few guys that I, like, during the practice said, wow, Chris Smith is really catching my eye. And then to hear Gus Bradley say afterwards, yeah, Chris Smith really flashing out there today, gave me confirmation that not all is lost in terms of my football acumen. but you know, I think it just became evident to them that Babin was getting passed talent-wise. Yes, he was very productive last year. He played a lot of snaps. There weren't a lot of alternatives. Andre Branch, I think you look at the second half of the year, was the most effective pass rusher that they had. But over the course of the full 16 games, it was Jason Babin. But, I think that the fact that he's released is a testament to just how lacking they've been in that department, that they could take a guy that was good enough to lead this team in sacks, a motley sack crew, and then let him go today, Tony. And as much for the fact that they don't need him, but as well as trying to do a solid for a veteran who has been a good guy in the locker room and has, you know, even taken on a leadership role to some degree with some of the younger players, that if he's going to have a chance to continue his career, it's a lot easier to catch on with a team now than, say, getting cut after the second preseason game.
Sure, and it says a couple things to me. It says that, look, Chris Smith is a guy that, without the pads on, obviously, but his first step is evident. I mean, he's got a burst at that position that it just doesn't feel like Babin has at that same level as a 34-year-old guy. And at that Leo position, they already have, they bring in Chris Clemens, who can fill in that role of the veteran kind of leader, teacher, mentor to some of the young guys on this team. And if you feel like Andre Branch has the talent, and Andre is one of those guys, he's going to tease you with his talent. And whether it ever shows up on the field, we're still going to have to find out. Chris Smith seems like he's a talented guy at that position as well. Look, this is a team that if you look at it a year ago, the Jacksonville Jaguars, people, the Jacksonville Jaguars just cut a pass rusher, their leading pass rusher from a season ago, because of the depth they feel like they have at that position. I mean, think about the change there from 2 years ago when they're picking that guy up off a waiver wire going, please, God, can we get somebody that can get 5 to 10 sacks a year?
Now, what was the number for Babbitt? 7.5 last year?
7.5.
7.5. Okay. You play as many snaps. Look, they talk about reducing the snaps for a lot of those defensive linemen this year. Cindric Marks being a big priority. More effective because you're playing better on those snaps that you're playing instead of getting worn down. All right, so you play that many snaps, you're going to get somebody's going to lead the team in sacks. It happened to be Jason Babin. He got 7.5. It's not an enormous total. You look at teams around the National Football League. Seattle's incredibly deep, Tony. That's a team everyone wants to compare to the Jags building process.
Sure.
To. And they're content. They'd love to have six guys get 8 sacks. But that's the thing. 6 of them get 8, and they're doing it as kind of rotational players. You don't need the one guy getting 15 or 16 sacks. Jason Babin's been that guy, by the way, at various times earlier in his career. He
sure
was that big.
He had back-to-back double-digit sack years. He had 18.
Was it 18?
Yeah.
I mean, he was a big-time pass rusher, and for a brief period of time, one of the handful of best ones in the National Football League. But, you know, that time is not right now. And, again, it's more of a committee approach. You want to keep these guys fresh. Not so much a committee that you don't have talented guys. You want to have 4 talented defensive ends that you're rotating in there along with getting pressure up the middle. And, again, keep these guys fresh. The sack total for any one individual may be depressed a little bit, although I think Chris Clemens, if he is as healthy as he claims to be, should push for double-digit sacks this year, I would think.
I would think so, and it tells you how good they feel about a guy like Chris Smith and what they've seen from him in the time from the draft until now. And again, they haven't put the pads on yet, but they knew that one of these guys, at that position, they have 4 guys that were really competing for snaps, that one of them was probably going to be the odd man out. And it felt like Jason Babin was probably going to wind up being that guy. He's 34 years old. They're giving him an opportunity as a guy that they like. They just don't know what his role was going to be in Jacksonville, but they like him as a player to say, look, go out there, see if there's anything else out there for you, because we knew the situation when they brought in Clemens and when they drafted Chris Smith. It was a question of how much are they going to like Smith going into training camp, and how many snaps is he going to get during the season, because somebody's got to go. There's just, you can't have 4 guys at that position rotating them, especially if you're going to change what you're doing on defense to include the auto, in part because you want to have a pass rusher from that linebacker side as well, and the depth that you need at defensive tackle with the guys that you want to rotate in there too. You can't have 4 guys at that one position.
And again, it all comes back to, as much as they want to win this year, they have longer-term goals in mind, and what is going to benefit you more. And I guess you could make the same argument with Blake Bortles, and many have already. What's going to benefit you more? Let the veteran that you know is not the long-term answer play for you, or let some of these guys get the lumps knocked into them a little bit this year and get that out of the way. You know, the difference being the entirety of your team is in the hands of the quarterback. You can play a young guy at the expense of a Jason Babin, play him his 20 snaps, and that's not going to necessarily impact every single player on that football team the way the quarterback position obviously would.
He probably winds up somewhere like New England or something where they rotate those pass rushers a lot.
They may take a look at him, and you know what? They may find what the Jags have found, that he's 34 years old, and we're told that Gus really is, you know, kind of fond of Jason Babin, that he really likes him personally. So there's no, you know, people looking, is there a reason with the timing? Yeah, the timing is more to here's the thing. Could you squat on a guy? You certainly could. And me, I probably would, because I'm not Gus Bradley. I would probably squat on a guy till the very last minute if I thought he had value, try to trade him for anything, get a seventh-round pick for him, sell him, you know, or maybe they have. Maybe they shopped him around. I would assume you shop any kind of veteran like this around before, and if the market's not there, he's just not there. But I think what this does is this sends a message to your locker room that we talk about doing things the right way, that we're all in this together, that you put your money where your mouth is when it comes to Babin, that you weren't, you know, an a-hole to just hang on to him knowing he's not part of your plans this year, gives sure. him an opportunity. It's not going to come back to haunt you, likely, Jason Babin being on the open market a couple months earlier than he could have been otherwise. So, you know, I think other people look and say, you know what? If I'm in that position one day, the Jags are going to do me right. And that just is one small drop in the bucket of how players are going to view this organization as an organization that's going to, you know, be straight up with you. And when it's time to go, they're going to tell you man to man, but they're going to give you an opportunity to catch on with another team.
No doubt about it. And look, we all here in Jacksonville, we have bought in to the process here with Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell and what they're doing. And it's hard until something starts going very wrong for those guys to really question them too much. This is another one of those where, look, they made a decision today that Babin and his 7.5 sacks last year, they bring in Clemens. They have decided that they would rather go with Andre Branch and a guy who's never set Brancher. Foot on the field in an NFL game and Chris Smith than Jason Babin. Look, that is a decision that could be wrong. I mean, it could cost the team something to not have Jason Babin and instead have a guy like Chris Smith fill that role with the Leo at some point in this season, rotating with Clemens and Branch. That could come back to haunt them a little bit, but it's the decision they made at this point, and it's hard to question these guys right now because it doesn't feel like anything that they've decided outside of Daryl Smith has really come back to haunt them. I mean, they've been pretty much on to this point, and this is another example of a 34-year-old veteran that they decided to walk away from because they have another 32-year-old veteran that can do what Jason Babin does, but better than Babin and Chris Clemens.
I think the feeling is simply this. If Jason Babin were on most teams in the National Football League, he would not likely be that team's leading sacker or anywhere
Probably
close
not.
To it. You know, and the fact that I think it's more an indication of the lack of pass rush that existed here in Jacksonville as anything. So, Jason Babin, good luck to you. You know,
sure.
Go on your way and see what you can make out of it. Yesterday's minicamp practice, Tony, not the best, and no. I think you heard that. I think you saw that with your own eyes when we were out there yesterday. Again, a pretty good crowd, over 1,200 people on a weekday mid-morning to early afternoon. Congrats for showing up in force once again to Jaguar fans out there. But, you know, quarterbacks looked a little bit off yesterday. And that's when that happens in one of these kind of practices, that's going to stand out like a sore thumb. Simply because that's what you're looking to get done out there. Was it Marcel Jensen that took a good thump yesterday, a little accidental thump?
I don't know if he took a shot or, like, if he slipped, and I think he may have hurt himself.
Is that what it was? I thought he took a little bump. It was, an accidental kind of situation.
Yeah.
Guys are running around at close to full speed. Occasionally, even though they try to pull up, they're not always going to be able to pull up. But they've done a pretty good job.
But he came
that.
Back into practice. He was fine.
Yeah, he came like a play or two later.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see guys go down, even if it's a running back who just slips and nobody touches him, and the entire coaching staff is yelling, stay on your feet,
yep.
keep your feet. So they're really serious about, you know, injuries are going to occur over the attrition of a football season. Why add to them if you don't have to at this point? But today, final practice, we'll see if they go the full distance or if they cut them loose a little bit early. I'd like to see them end on a high note. You know, when you hear Blake Bortles talk about looking average yesterday, when you're average in a non-contact 7-on-7, 11-on-11 kind of situation, even the fact that you don't have your top wide receivers out there, average is bad. Right? I mean, really, in this situation, you should be out there pretty much lighting things up almost on a daily basis because there's no chucking these receivers at the line of scrimmage. You know, there's a lot of things built in to work in the offense's favor. It was a bad day for the quarterbacks yesterday.
I thought, honestly, and we've been out there for all the mini camp practices, I thought that yesterday may have been the worst the offense has looked to this point. And I don't know if it's, you know, a combination of they just, they're getting exhausted because of the lack of receiver depth they have with what's going on the offensive side of the ball, or what it was. But yesterday I thought was the worst offensive day of camp to this point. I think, look, the defense has looked really good throughout this entire thing. And there is something to be said for these guys without really being able to, it's non-contact obviously, but there is a pass rush that is very visible out there for the Jags. And maybe that translates once they put on the pads. Maybe it doesn't. I'm looking forward to playing some of this Blake Bortles sound if you're out there and you haven't had an opportunity to hear it yet, because he was asked, like you said, Mike, how do you feel like you're throwing the ball? And he said, average. And we've seen quarterbacks and players always kind of, when that kind of question is asked and you knew you sucked that day, you kind of walk around that question a little bit, and instead Blake is one of these guys that to this point has been willing to face that kind of stuff head on. He's talking about his mechanics, the things that he's trying to work on, and how it may be affecting what is going on the field for him right now. So I had a lot of thoughts about what Blake Bortles had to say and what it may mean for him going forward as the potential leader of this team.
Yeah, we'll talk about that as we go along. Today we'll welcome in Jeff Logman, scheduled to join us about 5 minutes from now. We'll pick the brain of the chief film watcher in the, we call him, I guess, part of the Jaguars media, technically, right? He is the co-host of Jaguars Thursday. You'll hear him tonight with J.P. Shadrick on 1010XL at 6 o'clock. And, in fact, they'll be joined by Gus Bradley in the early portion of that broadcast tonight. So you want to hear from your coaches. They wrap up minicamp today on the practice field in just a short while. What time do they get underway today? I know they go
10:40.
So we're talking about less than a half an hour they'll get underway. They're supposed to go until 1 o'clock if they don't cut things short. We'll see how that all goes before they break for the remainder of the summer and reconvene for training camp coming up. When we come back, we'll tell you what the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day is. It's Jason Babin related. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jeff Logman coming up on the other side. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Tony, no sleep till Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's the Beasties.
Ah, it's Gerhardt Beast Mode. Am I right? Am I right, Lauren?
You're not right, but good try.
All right, that was good, because it's funny. A reporter shows up from the USA Today and gets quotes to the effect of everything we've been talking about for 2 months, and all of a sudden it's national news.
Oh, I know.
Gerhardt wants to get the rock. Hey.
Well, they ran the story for 2 months about basically that Blake Bortles is going to sit for a year.
It's unbelievable. He's going to sit for a year, Tony.
I know.
A month after the draft is breaking news, and Denard Robinson is catching the ball well in OTAs. That one broke nationally yesterday as well. So thanks for listening to Jaguars Today, all you national people. You could have learned about it a long time ago, or, of course, through the many outlets here at team headquarters at Everbank. That includes Jaguars Thursday, which tonight will feature J.P. Shadrick and Jeff Logman, along with the coach Gus Bradley. Tony Boselli on the road with one of the Jaguar fan caravan tours. I'm sure there's a specific name for that, and I just did not get that to you in a timely fashion, but they're out in Palm Coast tonight from 6 until 7:30 at the Public Supermarket at Belterre Crossing on Belterre Parkway in Palm Coast. So go check those guys out if you're down in that neck of the woods, or hear them tonight. Hear Tony calling in with Jeff Logman, who sits across from us right now in the Jaguars Today studios. What's going on, man?
Nothing. Hey, also, we got Andy Dingler for Scout's Eye. You know, we've been kind of neat every Thursday for the last couple of weeks. Dave Caldwell has allowed me to access some of his scouts, whether it be Chris Polian, Kyle O'Brien. Tonight we're going to have Andy Dingler. I mean, to talk about not only the process of scouting itself, but also some of the prospects on the team. And it's been very interesting to me. And it's been enlightening, I think, to the fans.
I think it's fascinating because to us, you are our conduit to kind of the scouting world, you know, the way you look at tape, and obviously players watch a lot of film. You break down your mistakes, what you did well, what you didn't do well. So you get that introduction to it, I guess, at an early age. But we always like talking to you, Tony and I, because you look at things, you can probably pick things out with your naked eye that we're not sure quite what we're looking at. So we're going to get into that today a little bit. But let's start with Jason Babin.
Mm-hmm.
Released today, and I think the feeling is he's 34 years old. They got a young crop of guys that they think are going to be pushing for playing time. I think this was performance-based. They like the numbers that they have right now. I don't think there's any hidden anything in there other than them setting probably a good precedent in a lot of veterans' eyes to give this guy a chance to catch on somewhere else if he has that opportunity.
Sure, sure. And then, in fact, I had an idea that this may be coming. And so yesterday I went and watched the Leo position specifically, and then that's really what I focused in on. And I'm sitting there looking at it, and you go, okay, you got Andre Branch, you got Chris Clemens, you got Ryan Davis, Chris Smith, and Jason Babin. I mean, and then there's another young guy, number 94, and I can't remember his name.
How are you going to get them all on the field?
I mean, how are you going to play them all? And so I'm sitting there thinking, I said, well, you know, if there's going to be one guy that ends up going, it's probably going to be Jason Babin. And I know that this was probably a very difficult release for Gus Bradley. What was Jason Babin's label prior to coming here?
Not a team guy.
A malcontent.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, Gus Bradley reached him, and all of a sudden Jason Babin became a leader. You know, so I'm sure that this was very difficult for Gus. And I'm sure that when they came to the realization that, hey, look, it's going to be very difficult for Jason Babin to make this team, that they said, hey, look, we need to go ahead and do it now out of respect for Jason Babin to give him an opportunity to catch on, because some teams haven't had mini camps, and this would be a great opportunity for him to get into somebody's mini camp and for them to take a look at him.
For you, Jeff, as someone who obviously you do the game day broadcast, you watch the tape on a week-by-week basis, looking at this team over the past 2 or 3 years, I mean, they've been chasing pass rush for a decade here in Jacksonville. But looking at this team just in the last 2 or 3 years during this transition for these two guys, they just cut a guy who was their leading sack man last year because of the depth they feel like they have at that position. Did you think that in 2 years they could be at that point at any spot on this roster with where they were?
Well, I mean, you would hope that they would work to that, you know, but I think with free agency and the ability to acquire a guy like Clemens gives you that ability, you know, and Clemens, I believe, is ready for a double-digit sack year. You know, here's a guy that last year came back, and what did he have, 6 or 7 sacks?
Yeah.
And that was not even a year removed from ACL reconstruction, which he suffered in the, I believe it was the championship game or a playoff game against the Washington Redskins in Washington. I mean, and trust me, I've been through an ACL reconstruction. To be able to accomplish that in less than a year is amazing. You know, so I expect big things out of Chris Clemens this year. So, I mean, I think that's what their expectation is.
Yeah, and as you mentioned Branch, I mean, it seems like Gus mentions him every day.
He looks fantastic. I mean, you know, I've been, I don't want to say one of his biggest detractors, but I had some doubt about Andre Branch because of his ability to bend his knees. And his ability to bend his knees over the last, you know, year, I would say, has gotten better. You know, is it ever going to be great? Probably not. But the way he plays with the energy and the commitment has changed from his rookie year to last year. And in the OTA so far, he's looked simply the best he's ever looked. So I think with him, his emergence, with Davis, who gives them great positional flexibility when they go to that lightning package, he can play the Leo on regular downs. They go lightning package, he can play a 3 technique, which is a defensive tackle. And Jason Babin doesn't really give you that as the flexibility to move inside. He lined up some there in the OTAs, but I don't see him having that ability. He is more of a true Leo or a defensive end.
Jeff Wagman here with us. What do you look for when you're watching these defensive ends? Because there's non-contact. Is it first step quickness? Is it being in the right place, knowing your assignment? What are you looking for that these guys are jumping off the field at you?
Athleticism. You know, quickness, speed, progression and pass rush moves. And you're starting to see that with Andre Branch. I mean, those are the things that you can really tell with him. And Clemens, you can just see that quick twitch. I mean, he's got athleticism. He's got quick twitch. So, I mean, you look at a lot of different things. I mean, as far as assignment and all that, I mean, it's kind of hard to really say, okay, well, he really screwed that up, unless it was really obvious, because you don't know the exact assignment of every guy. I mean, trust me, I was the first Leo. Pete Carroll's first year in the National Football League was in 1990 for the New York Jets, and he instituted his defense. I was the first Leo. We didn't call it a Leo back then. I think that some of that may have ended up coming out of what he tried to do with me back in 1990 all the way through 1994. Because, I mean, I was dropping back into pass coverage, and there was not a lot of defensive ends in the 4-3 at that time that did that. So I like to say I was the first Leo.
You got a new nickname. I don't know if you realize that. For now on, it's Jeff the first Leo Logman. Is who he is. You're the trendsetter. Little did we know. I mean, I guess if we put two and two together, it would have been easy to come up with.
Well, and I brought something for you.
You did?
I did.
Oh, I love
because,
I love
you know,
stuff.
my time in New York, 6 years, and I know you're a Jets fan. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people in Jacksonville are somewhat transient. You know, they came from another program. They were fans of another program. And so I was cleaning out the house yesterday, going through some stuff and, you know, trying to downsize some of the stuff that I have. And I came across something. I said, you know, I said, I know somebody that would really like to have this. And so I brought it.
What is it? Is it something to commemorate the 1-15 season in the 90s?
No, it wasn't that.
Arizona, by the way, was our whipping boy. Oh, my goodness, Tony. Look at this.
That's awesome.
This is a lot. Is this a game used Loggeman?
That's a season used helmet
this
that
is
I wore
amazing,
when I was in New York.
Brother. Are you
and this
kidding
is,
me?
And this is a not a game worn jersey, but, you know, my mom probably bought every old Loggeman Jets jersey at the stadium at one time.
So she's got the other two.
You know, you can do whatever you want with it.
That is awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're
it's
welcome.
Going up in the little sports hall of fame at the house, Tony. Tony's going to get a little shot of that for Twitter. Look at you, man.
But, I mean, you know, in today's day and age in the National Football League, they gave you a helmet, and when it starts to show any signs of wear with the concussion awareness, they replace the helmet.
Good point, yeah.
And back in the old days, as
apparently
you can
not.
See from that helmet, they did not replace the helmet. Once you got a helmet, that helmet was your helmet for the entire year.
Yeah, there's no repainting of any.
No,
there's no nothing.
Nothing.
You ever look at that helmet, knowing what we know about concussions now, and say, "Man, I was a maniac."
Yeah,
Tony, look at that. Look at what is stained above the E, and tell me that's not somebody's blood on there.
Might be.
I think Jurassic Park 4.
It might be, and
Jeff
that's that helmet. I'm guessing was probably from 91, 2, 3, or 4. It was one of those years. Because I'm, you know, my first year with New York, we had the white face mask. The second year, we went to the black face mask, but I had a different face mask. And then in the ensuing years, I had the middle bar. The first 2 years, I didn't have the middle bar. So it was from one of those years.
That's phenomenal, brother. I appreciate
You're
that
welcome.
Very much. That's very cool. Very good stuff. And even though it's not Jags, I know there are a lot of Jag fans out there jealous.
No, right but I, you know, there's a lot of Jaguar fans that are fans of other teams, and it's okay. I mean,
oh,
that's,
sure.
That's okay. I mean,
that's where,
you know,
you grew up and you
everybody
had loyalty
grew
to
up,
it.
So, you know, loyal to a certain team. I mean, I grew up in a little town in Virginia called Sterling. And when I grew up, the NFL back then obviously wasn't as what it is today. And in fact, in Sterling, Virginia was the place where the first National Nautilus Fitness Center was ever built.
Oh, yeah.
And it was built at a place called Capital Courts Racquet Club, which was a racquetball court, and it had the Nautilus Fitness Center, and, you know, it had the spa. Not the spa. I mean, it wasn't a spa. It was like they had a, probably a steam room and a shower. Well, my dad used to work out, you know, and so I used to tag along to him, and he'd go there and work out with Nautilus. Well, back then, they didn't have year-round training in the National Football League.
Right.
They didn't even have a workout facility for the most part. They might have had a closet with a little bit of weights in it. So the players back then in the off-season would just find whatever place that they could to work out at. Well, I grew up as a kid being taken to Capital Courts Fitness Center and watching Joe Theismann be the two-time club racquetball champion. I watched Neil Olkowitz and Dave Butts and all these guys come in and work out because that was the only place that they could work out with weights. I mean, because this was a Nautilus Fitness Center. You know, so I grew up around it, and I get that. I mean, people grow up with a team, and then, you know, in Jacksonville being an emerging, growing, thriving city, I mean, it's going to have the same type of thing, and that's okay.
I think it's amazing. You mentioned Theismann, racquetball champion. They probably
he was a
void
phenomenal.
His
I mean, to watch him play racquetball, I mean, you want to talk about one of the ultimate competitors. In fact, he was such a competitor, a lot of people at the club thought he was a borderline a-hole. I mean, because, I mean, he
well,
was just
a lot of
he
people
was serious
who
about
weren't
it.
At that club over the years probably thought that, too. But I happen to like
I still I still believe that because he criticized me my rookie year
oh,
one
did
time.
He?
Oh, yeah.
You never
I'll never
that,
forget
huh?
that. I'll never forget it to this day. I was in training camp, and I was a holdout my rookie year. And I'm an early riser still this day. And I'm an early riser. I was up there getting breakfast and had, I don't know, like a 3-4 week holdout, something like that. And sitting there eating breakfast, getting ready to head over to the facility to try to catch up because I hadn't been there. And Theismann was getting ready to call one of our games, and he's there, and he sits down, pulls up a chair, and we have a great conversation. I mean, here I am, a kid. I grew up in Sterling. Hey, man, I used to watch you, you know, club racquetball champion, all that kind of stuff. And a great conversation. Very nice, you know, and then all of a sudden he gets on the game broadcast and he just starts ripping me. I'm like, you jackass.
You know? You thought you'd buttered him up pretty good, huh?
Well, I wasn't trying to butter him up. I was just having a conversation with what I thought was a nice guy, you know, and a guy that I grew up as a kid thinking, man, he's a heck of a player, you know, Super Bowl champion.
Have you run into issues with that? I mean, you were that guy. You were the player in the locker room. Circle of trust, that whole thing. You know, what goes on in here stays in here. You're now on the other side of the microphone, so
yeah, you know how it is. Yeah, you want to be treated fair. You know, I've always believed that if you can't say something in front of a player or to a player, then why would you say it in a broadcast or any type of broadcast, whether it be a game broadcast or a weekday radio show? I mean, to me, you've got to be honest and you've got to be up front. And there were times that, I remember Terrence Knighton. You know, I came out and I played. He played like garbage one time. And he caught wind of it. And so I went to see Terrence and I said, I heard you heard what I said. And he said, yeah. And I said, it's the truth. You know, I said, I stand by it.
And
I said,
how did he react to that?
And he was good with it because I said, look, Terrence, I have such high expectations for you because of how much talent you have, but you just didn't play very well. You played like garbage, you know, and so, I mean, I think the players respect you for that. First of all, they respect the fact that you played.
That's a big part.
But then if they understand that you're being honest and upfront, and not trying to create a stir just because you're trying to say something outlandish, but you truly have a heartfelt belief in something that you say, I think it makes a difference.
Jeff Logman here with us. Catch him tonight on Jaguars Thursday. Catch him for about the next 30 minutes or so with Fat Tony and myself. We'll get into what Jeff has seen, not only from the defensive ends, the potential pass rushers on the football field throughout OTAs and minicamp, but we'll start in next on the quarterbacks. Not a great day for those guys, admittedly, yesterday by Gus Bradley, by Blake Bortles himself. But overall, what does the quarterback position look like, and how difficult is it to assess that with so many wide receivers missing throughout the OTAs up until this point? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, along with Jeff Logman. You want to get in, you got a question for Jeff, got a great opportunity right now. 641-1010. You can always tweet us as well at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lorne, and we'll pass those along to Jeff as well. Jaguars Today continues in a moment, live from Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, I've lost it already, Tony. Where were we on the first song?
It was No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Right. This sounds like
used to go
Don
to,
Henley,
I
right?
I actually used to go to a bar in Brooklyn
on
Monday night called the Press Box. I don't even know if the place is still open or not, but used to go there a couple times a year. They'd want players to come out and, you know, give you a couple $100, come on out to the Press Box. And
right.
So I remember going to Brooklyn doing that. In fact, the guy, when I used to live in New York, you know, our old training facility was at Hempstead, in Hempstead at the campus of Hofstra. And so, you know, we lived on Long Island, and we were always trying to find seasonal rentals. You remember Jones Beach.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Everybody knows where Jones Beach is at. I mean, that's like the summertime vacation destination for
sure.
Everybody in New York and Long Island. Well, right across the inlet from Jones Beach, which was a big state park, was a little town called Point Lookout. And that's where I lived at, was in Point Lookout. And the guy's house that I rented from lived in Brooklyn. Charlie.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Don't Come Around Here No More. I'm lost so far.
What do those two things have in common?
I know that. Well, that's the idea, Lauren. What do they have in common? That's why it would be a theme today. Lauren's always got a music theme. What do you got? Babin? Is this a... Is this Fortunati's whispering? First of all, Fortunato goes, Tom Petty, that's Tom Petty, as loud as he can. And this is anyway Jason Babin related today.
It's not. You're gonna have to keep guessing.
All right, we'll have to keep guessing on that one. Before we get to the quarterbacks that you've seen this offseason, I was just about to tell you something on the break. You're talking about memorabilia and going through and how they, when you get put on a football card, they'd send you a couple hundred copies. They'd send you a complete set of that year's cards.
Yep.
I'll never forget this, and I hope I have most of the details right. My buddy Brian Mullen, who now works for the PGA Tour, for a long time, wrote for the Times Union. We covered the Jacksonville Suns together. And a buddy has got called up to the Toronto Blue Jays. He said his first day there, you didn't have a place to stay. They put you up in Sky Dome. You know, it's a hotel plus the baseball stadium. First time he goes to his locker, nobody's in there. He just goes down, checks it out. There are $30,000 worth of checks in his locker, and it was his share of all the licensing deals from all the card companies and all the whatever that the Major League Baseball Players Association collectively negotiated.
Right.
And the first time you got called up, you got that equivalent or whatever it was. Is there something comparable to that in the National Football League? Do players get checks from the various card companies,
yeah.
or
is yeah. that? Yeah, back when the football card industry was rolling, I mean, it was, you know, the checks were pretty decent, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. I don't know how it is in baseball exactly, but in the National Football League, if you're the 53rd player on a roster, or if you're one of the marquee elite players in the National Football League, your share is the same.
It's the same thing,
right? Exact same.
Right.
You know, so as long as you're on an active roster for X amount of time, you share it into that pool. You know, the football card trading company business has certainly taken a downturn. I mean, how many companies used to be out there? I mean, they used to be endless. Because of the collectible business
was
huge.
It boomed in the 90s.
Not so much anymore. So, I mean, that's obviously shrunk.
I've got a handful of cards from when I was a kid, football cards, Tony. I don't remember collecting football cards when I was a kid, but somehow I came across a couple of packs. Got an O.J. Simpson record holder card of when he broke the rushing record, ran for 2,003 yards. I don't know why that stands out.
I think the one card that I had maybe the most of, you know, because I remember playing, we used to play football card football. You'd lay them all out. I mean, literally, you lay the positions out, you know, on the carpet, and you got to move, like, two little clicks each card. You know, and if you covered a card up, that guy was blocked.
I don't want to ever hear you say fantasy football is for geeks. Ever. I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't want to ever hear that come out of your mouth.
So we used to play with football cards like that. But I remember one of the most frequent guys that I had, football cards, and I wasn't a collector. I mean, just, you know, you had it because you wanted the bubble gum.
Right.
You know, it was Dan Dierdorf. And I remember at that age, you're like, who the hell's Dan Dierdorf? You know, he didn't carry the ball. He didn't throw the ball. He didn't catch the ball. He didn't kill the quarterback. So, as far as I was concerned, I didn't know who he was.
Sure.
Well, he's a Hall of Famer. You know, one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever play the game.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
But they printed too many of his cards to make them valuable, apparently, because Lagerman had dozens upon dozens of them.
My most prized football card that I was ever on, they did a... I want to say it was a Heroes or like a Legend Series football card.
Okay.
And so what they basically did was a current NFL player would proclaim who his idol was as a kid growing up. And what they did is they put the idol kind of in the background with the current player in the foreground.
Sure.
And growing up as a kid in the 70s, the Pittsburgh Steelers were fantastic. Even I grew up in Redskin country. You kind of always, you know, made your way to the great teams and the great players. Jack Lambert was a guy that I just thought it was just played the game the way it was supposed to be played. He was mean, he was tough, he was nasty, and he didn't have any front teeth.
No, he didn't.
I thought that was cool as hell. You know, so I remember one of my favorite football cards was being on a card with Jack Lambert, and I still have, you know, copies of that.
That is pretty cool.
And I cherish it. My other second favorite card is I was a huge hockey fan, still am somewhat. And right next to our training facility at Hofstra was the Nassau Coliseum where the Islanders played at. And so I used to go to a lot of the Islander games, and I don't know if you remember, but they had a Pierre Turgeon was kind of their scorer, but then they had a big defenseman. His name was Huey Krupp. And Huey Krupp was one of the biggest players in the National Hockey League at that time, and I got to take a football card picture on the ice at Nassau Coliseum wearing Huey Krupp's bottom pants, and they had to order special order size 14 skates. And it was cool. You know, so here I am in a football card and with a hockey stick laying on the ground with a football in front of it instead of a hockey puck. Pretty cool.
They used to do a lot of stuff like that. That is when it was booming back then.
Yep.
And they're like, let's come up with more creative ideas. You ever meet Lambert? You ever talk to him?
Never have.
It's funny that because the whole story with Chuck Noll passing away. Because why? That's interesting you said. Why?
Well, because
why
he's a game. Well, I mean, once he retired from football, he became a game warden in the state of Pennsylvania. And if you came across Jack Lambert, chances are you were doing something illegal.
Ah, okay. You're looking at it from that perspective.
In the state of Pennsylvania.
See, Reggie Jackson was my hero when I was a kid, and I debated whether I ever want to actually meet him or interview him because if he turns out to be an ass, which some people say he is. I remember him a certain way, and that's the way he will always be, as far as I'm concerned.
He is an avid car collector, I do know.
Yes, he is an avid car collector.
I tried for 10 years every year to get Reggie Jackson on with Mike, and I just never could get in contact with the right guy to get him on.
Probably for the best. We'll get to the QBs. We got some calls on the line, so let's get to those. If you have you have an opportunity right now to talk to Jeff Lagerman, 641-1010. We'll start with John, who wants to talk about running backs with you. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, okay. I want to talk about the running backs. Obviously, Gerhardt's going to be number one, you would assume. And everybody's talking about Denard Robinson playing so well. Maybe he might win the second slot. I'm curious what you think Todman's going to play out to be, because I really like what Storm Johnson does from UCF, and I don't see us running with four running backs.
That's good.
So unless they put him on the practice squad. lot.
It's going to be a great competition. Yeah, no doubt that Gerhardt is going to be the man. I mean, he's a guy that can stay on the field on all three downs. In fact, when Adrian Peterson would come off the field, most of the time it was on third down. So Gerhardt obviously has third down ability. He's got the size and got the speed to be a first and a second down back. After that, it's going to be a dogfight. You know, Todman's got great straight line speed. When he has to stop, change directions, he kind of has to gear it down a little bit. He doesn't do it at full speed. That's probably was one drawback. Storm Johnson is going to be kind of a wait and see, but he's got speed. He's got size. Played against some good football teams at UCF. So we got to kind of wait and see when he gets the pads on. Now, Denard Robinson is probably one of the most interesting guys that I think is going to watch in all of training camp. And the reason I say that is last year when he came in, they said, okay, they gave him the cute nickname OW, offensive weapon. So I started watching him last year, and he lines up in the slot, and they throw him the ball, and he can't catch it. And he lines up at running back, and, well, you're not going to replace Maurice on first and second down, so maybe third down. Well, you can't catch it out of the backfield. You drop screens. That's not good, right? Well, this year in OTAs, he hadn't had a drop yet.
Catching everything, yeah.
I mean, everything. And, you know, you got to wonder, you know, the reason why he went from quarterback to running back at Michigan was the nerve damage in the throwing arm. If the nerve damage affects his ability to throw, why wouldn't it affect his ability to catch?
Could.
Is this a sign that nerve damage is starting to dissipate and the nerves are starting to regenerate, recover? Because how else are you going to explain it? How do you go from catching 50% of the balls to not having a drop within 1 year? You can't say, well, he just really worked at it all off season.
Does it not work that way? Seriously.
I mean, it's possible, but something else has to be going on for it to be that dramatic. And the only thing that I could guess is that nerve damage is starting to have repaired itself to where he can now catch the ball smooth because he's been fantastic.
It has stood out that he's been pretty much perfect in that regard. He may be perfect up till now. It has also stood out to me because it's so rare to see the ball on the ground in these kind of non-contact drills that Todman's had a few drops coming out of the backfield. Had one yesterday, as a matter of fact. So, I mean, again, this is a situation like we talked about earlier. Blake saying he played average yesterday. Average means bad to me in this circumstance because
he's had better days.
Yeah, right. It's not the end of the world, but this is set up. If anything, quarterbacks, receivers should be shining, shouldn't they?
In OTAs where there's no pads and there's no hitting, I mean, this should be a glorified 7-on-7 to where the ball doesn't hit the ground. And in fact, I was talking to Johnny Osher about it, and I said, how good did OTAs look with Peyton Manning? And he said it was unbelievable. He said, you know, the ball never hit the ground. You know, the defensive players just, you know, they couldn't do anything because there was no contact. And he said it was just so seamless. Well, in this OTA for the Jaguars, it's not at that point, and it's not going to be at that point until the quarterbacks and the wide receivers start, you know, generating some familiarity with each other, an understanding of the system, and the quarterback play gets better. You know, I've always said this. Chad Henne is going to be as good as those around him. I don't think he's going to make a lot of people extremely better. You know, will Blake Bortles get to the point where he's going to be better than those around him and make those better around him? Possibly. But it's going to take some time.
We'll hear from Blake coming up in a little bit, some of his comments after practice yesterday. In the meantime, 641-1010. Let's get Kyle up next with Jeff Loggeman. Hi, Kyle. How are you?
Hello.
Kyle, what's up?
What's up, man? Hey, big fan of Loggeman. I was talking to my buddy earlier this morning, and he said the Jaguars released Babin. Why would they release Babin after he was lead here in sacks last year? I don't understand that. We need a lot of help on the front here.
Gotcha. Yeah, we talked about it at the top of the program with Jeff, but in a nutshell, Jeff, your thoughts on that?
I mean, when you go out and you get a guy like Chris Clemens, you got Andre Branch who's developing, Ryan Davis is developing and has more positional flexibility. You got a draft pick in Chris Smith who can play the Leo, can also play the other side defensive end in more of a six-eye type of role. And six-eye is where you head up on the tight end or just slightly inside shade to be a more physical, run-stopping defensive end, which Chris really did at Arkansas. You know, it's when you got five guys, you're not going to keep five Leos.
Yeah, by the way, Gerald Rivers was the guy you were thinking of
Gerald
earlier
at
Ole Miss as well. So, yeah. But bottom line is, they're happy about where they are with the progress of some of these young players. That's a good sign, actually, that, you know, Jason Babin probably led this team in sacks by default last year. Not too many teams he would have led the team in sacks with.
You know, Jason, he plays the run very well at times. But he's really a one-mode type of Leo. He pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. Clemens has a little bit more quick twitch. He's a little bit better against the run, probably a little more athletic in pass coverage than Jason Babin. So you really had two guys, and if Jason Babin came out and just had a fantastic OTA, and I thought he was good in OTAs, but I think this is more of a respect type of thing. It was a numbers game. And I think Gus Bradley really connected with Jason Babin. This is him saying, okay, look, you know, more than likely not going to keep you, and here's an opportunity for you to catch on.
All right, Jeff Logman here with us, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony with you. Jeff's going to stick around for about 15 more minutes, head out to the practice field. Final mini camp for the Jags, scheduled to go until 1 o'clock today. Have a full report on what we can tell you about, at least, tomorrow in that regard. If you've got a question for Jeff Logman, now's the time. 641-1010. Hop on board. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. So mini camp wrapping up today for the Jags, and then they go on hiatus for a little while, get a little downtime, coaching staff included, but it doesn't mean it has to be downtime for you. If you don't have your season tickets yet, they're on sale for 2014. Right now, you can become a season ticket holder and have access to unprecedented Jags 365 benefits year-round. That includes private Chalk Talk sessions, a Meet the Rookies event, pre- and post-game access to the field, press conferences, and a lot more. You can make your football fantasy a reality right now at the newly renovated EverBank Field this season by going to Jaguars.com or calling 633-2000, 633-2000, and catch all the action at EverBank Field this season. Got more calls on the line for Jeff Logman.
Is the theme no?
What was that right
this
there?
This is Metallica, No Leaf Clover.
Yes, and why would the theme be no? Good work.
Why would the theme be no?
What happened yesterday? Last night.
What happened last night?
It was just reported in the...
Oh, no-hitter.
There you go.
Wait, we just got a baseball theme on Jaguars today.
You sure did.
That's what confused me.
Anything that gets me No Leaf Clover by Metallica, I'm okay with.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Take your word for
good
it.
Good work.
Baseball fan at all, Logman?
That's pretty sharp. I
take it or leave it.
When I was a kid growing up, man, I used to love playing baseball, but watching baseball was like watching paint dry.
Yeah.
You know, but I do enjoy watching the World Series. I will say that.
Yeah, I'm still a big baseball fan, but not nearly the size fan I used to be when I was a kid, too. Something about
but
that.
But it's a great sport to play.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, loved it.
I haven't come across really one that's a bad sport to play, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I got my Al Bundy, you know, statement in that my junior year in high school, we were state baseball champs.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at Logman. What did you play?
Pretty impressive.
First base.
My junior year I played first base, and then when we got to the playoffs, I moved to catcher, and then my senior year,
catcher, third base. That's
I played catcher all year, but it was amazing that we were state champs my junior year, and we had one senior on the team, and it was Dennis Quaid, and he batted ninth and played second base.
How about that?
Pretty good.
There you go.
The next year, we only lost one game. We lost to Warren County High School. We lost to them 1-0, and we didn't even qualify for playoffs.
Really?
How was that?
You had to win your district back then to qualify for the playoffs.
And so I'm assuming they went undefeated in the district.
They went undefeated in the district, and they were the ones that advanced.
How about that?
Pretty amazing.
And you always remember the one you lost, Tony. I don't know if Jeff could quote us from the 29 victories they had that season. Maybe he could. I probably could. Before we get to these calls here, let's take a look. Just in a nutshell, up to this point, Henny, Bortles, what have you seen, good, bad, otherwise?
Well, I mean, Henny's been okay. You know, I mean, he's kind of been what you would expect. You know, great grasp of the offense, solid player. With Blake Bortles, you know, up and down. You know, the last week, I think it was the first part of the week, you watch some of the stuff out there, and you're like, whew, not so good. You know, but the one thing that you got to look above and beyond the throws and the completions and incompletions, that you have to kind of watch his footwork, watch his presence in the pocket, watch his command of the offense. And he's got excellent pocket presence, just little subtle moves in the pocket. He throws very accurately on the run. You know, and in the National Football League, very few plays are OTA types. In other words, they don't happen like they're drawn up. You know, like Jed Fish gets up on the grease board and says, we want this guy and a ball being thrown right here when this guy does that. You know, that's a perfect world, but it rarely in the National Football League is it ever perfect. You know, so you got to have a quarterback who can adapt and adjust, and I think that's when he's at his best. So I think he will show more when it gets live as opposed to OTAs, but he's clearly got work to do.
I know, and he talked about, Tony, yesterday post-practice, we'll hear him coming up in a minute, that he's not even working on. So he's working on right now footwork, as you talked about, and the results of everything else. If he's getting those steps right, then he'll move on to the next step in
sure.
what he needs to work on, kind of thing. But I mean, we've all seen the deep ball, flutter, float, whatever you want to call it.
He's got a Billy Kilmer to him every now and then.
He's got, yeah, exactly.
To go old school.
And right, to go old school. You go, I mean, if you want to go on the good side, you can say Peyton Manning throws a lot of ducks as well, but.
Yeah. Now he does. He's back in the day, he didn't do that.
Not so much.
I was a kid, though, growing up, and we used to have a ball that would flutter. Nice Billy Kilmer. That's how Billy used to throw it,
yeah,
you know?
Because you're an old guy.
Yeah. I'm an old guy.
Why? Any concern whatsoever with any of that? I mean, or is it just really...
No, I mean, the expectation with him was that, you know, he was going to sit back and learn, and they want to take all the pressure off. But, you know, also you got to think about what he has been through since the completion of the season at UCF. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the guy, but for any rookie, really, a high draft pick, you know, you're preparing for the combine. And then after the combine, you're preparing for pro workout days. And then all of a sudden, you're whisked away on the draft. And before the draft, you have to take visits to what, you know, I think they're eligible to take like 20-something. Each team's allowed 20 guys or something like that to come in.
I think it's 30 even, yeah.
Or 30. You know, so chances are he was on the road for an incredible amount of time.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, after the draft, you jump on a plane, you go to a city, you're introduced, and then you have a rookie mini camp, and then you have the rookie premiere day out in California, and then you've got the rookie symposium coming up. I mean, it's a whirlwind. You know, so at what point do you just say, okay, let's just let him get ready to play football? You know, so... And the quarterback position is so complicated and hard to evolve in because it takes a complete dedication and a clear mindset to do that. And I think they're taking the right approach, saying, hey, look, he's not going to play. And even though in the back of their minds, I'm sure they're saying, hey, look, he's going to play when he's ready. But by them saying that, they take the pressure off of him of being the third overall pick and to save the franchise, you know. So it's the right approach to take. He'll play when he's ready. And so that kind of brings up, you know, how many quarterbacks do they keep on the roster? If you're truly committed to letting him develop, you probably got to keep a Ricky Stanzi-type guy because if something does happen to Chad Henne, you don't want – your hand forced to where you're having to play a rookie that you don't think is quite ready yet.
Ryan O'Halloran characterized it on Monday that if Blake Bortles is inactive on game day, let's say you didn't keep Stanzi, right, and you're keeping him as that buffer in worst-case scenario, Henne gets hurt. So on game day, it would be Henne and Stanzi as your 1-2 if Blake Bortles is inactive on game day. Is that a red flag, or is that just par for the course in this pace yourself development of their rookie quarterback?
Well, I don't think it's a red flag. I think at some point, you know, when you feel like he's ready, then he's going to be active. But, you know, Gus Bradley came from Russell Wilson. I mean, that's really for the great experience that he's had with a young quarterback. When Russell Wilson was drafted, did he come in with the expectation that he was going to be the starter? No.
But they had just signed Matt Flynn in free agency.
Exactly.
So he came in with a lot less pressure.
And I think Gus probably, and I'm guessing here, but, you know, Gus probably saw that and said, wait a minute, there's something to that. Here's a rookie that comes in with no expectation of being the starter, and that he developed on his own. He got better. He earned the respect of his teammates. He earned the respect of the coaches. And then when he showed that he was ready, we played him.
Right. He forced his way into the
exactly.
lineup.
So I think he's trying to bring that same type of approach to Blake Bortles, even though he's the third overall pick in the draft.
All right, 6-4-1-10-10. Let's get a couple of calls in while we've got Jeff for a few more minutes. Terrence, our good friend, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mike. Hey, Jeff.
Hey,
Mike, I want to say this. I've been out to every open practice that they have, but I want to say I am concerned about the quarterback position. But I've noticed a couple of guys out there, Jason Bavin and Red Bryant. But yesterday they had, in the nickel, which I don't understand, they had Jason inside playing like either the 3, I couldn't tell, or the 4 technique. Or the 4 high.
3 technique.
So,
3 technique.
They hadn't played in the 3. So that seemed like, I even asked him, he said he was trying to get the guard to come out the paint, which I don't know what that means. But that's why I understand why would they have him. That seemed like there'd be a disadvantage for Jason to be inside like that.
Well, that was kind of the quandary with Jason Babin. Okay, are you going to move Chris Clemons into that defensive tackle when you go to that lightning package? Are you going to move Andre Branch into that three technique defensive tackle spot when you go to the Lightning package? Probably not. I mean, those two are suited to playing the outside. You know, so the guys that are suited to play at that defensive tackle spot when they go to that is a guy like Davis. You know, so that's probably why they wanted to get Jason some reps in there to kind of see if that, if it was going to be a comfortable type situation.
Right, kind of like a last look maybe to see. Maybe there's some versatility here we're overlooking, that kind of
thing. Yeah, and it's truly hard to grade, but I think, you know, they had something in mind. You know, they know what the numbers are going to be. And like I said, you know, out of respect for Jason, let him have an opportunity to catch on as quickly as he can.
Terrence, good question. We appreciate the call. Let's go to David up next here on Jaguars Today. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, I got two questions. Okay. First, what's the most memorable hit you ever put on anybody? And second, Mike won't appreciate this, but is there any shrimp in the river yet?
I haven't seen any shrimp in the river yet.
Kidding me? I appreciate shrimp. I just don't appreciate having to go get them myself.
I'll know more tomorrow on that, David. I'll let you know on Saturday morning.
Fact-finding mission coming up, I have a feeling, for logging.
There's probably two hits that I remember most in the National Football League, and they didn't end up, they weren't good for me. One of them was against the San Francisco 49ers early in my career, back in their heyday when they had Joe Montana and Roger Craig and Jerry Rice and John Taylor, and we were playing the 49ers at the Meadowlands. And Jesse Sopolu at that time was a guard, and I was the right outside linebacker, right defensive end, and he pulls to my side and hits me on the left side of my helmet. And literally for the remainder of that game, I couldn't see from my nose to my left clear. Just was like, oh, my gosh.
I smell a lawsuit coming.
Finished the game, of course. You know, back then, it was smelling salt and rock and roll.
Right on.
The second hit that I remember Eric Dickerson, who I remember growing up watching Eric Dickerson, you know, straight-up runner. You know, you're like, man, if I could just have one clear shot at Eric Dickerson, I'd crush him because he runs upright.
Right.
So we're playing Eric Dickerson, I believe he was with the Colts at that time, and goal line, and I'm coming screaming down behind the line of scrimmage on the backside, and I've got a clear, unobstructed shot at Eric Dickerson. And I'm going to kill him. I mean, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to blow him up, and I'm going to stand over top of him and point my finger up in the air and then down at him and say, how'd you like that? And I came across, and I hit him. And next thing I know, the crowd went quiet, and as I rolled over, Eric Dickerson is in the back of the end zone spiking the ball. And I went, what the hell happened? So the next day you watch the film, he ran right through me, and upright, never even was fazed with the contact of me hitting him. The guy was so strong, even though he ran upright.
And plus he had all that padding. I mean, he wore every pad that they made for football. You remember that? I mean, he had the big neck roll that the linebackers wore. He'd wear that.
Oh, yeah.
He had everything, man. Every square inch of
It's funny, you remember
skin.
The ones that didn't turn out so good more than you do the ones that were good.
It's just like your senior year in baseball. He brings up the one loss, Tony. He knows all the details. He knows the two guys that trucked him. In his career. All right, let's wrap up with Paul here up next for Jeff Logman on Jaguars Today. Hi, Paul. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Hey, Mike and Jeff, I'm just caught the tail end of your trading card talk, and just want to let you know I had a rookie-signed Mickey Mantle card. But just to let you know, I have about 50 of your cards.
Yeah.
There you go.
I like it.
There you go. 50 Logman cards. Yeah. I know Paul. Paul.
I was the Dan Dierdorf from my era. You get a million of my cards, they're worth nothing.
I don't think he means 50 of the same one. I think he means, I mean, that's.
And that, I don't mean type of player, because Dan Dierdorf was a great player.
The 90s, you could, I mean, everybody and their brother put out their own set of cards.
I'll
so
tell you
two
other hits that I remember. These were tangles with offensive linemen. We were playing the Atlanta Falcons, and they had probably one of the most dirtiest players in the National Football League. It was Bill Frelick. Yeah, you know, played offensive guard.
Yeah,
I remember
bottom
of the pile, he tried to hit me in my, you know, my privates, and of course that ensued a pretty good fight. But the one I remember most was with against Hall of Famer Bruce Matthews, and Bruce Matthews pancaked me one time. You know, I got my legs tangled up, and he just takes me over the pile, and boom! I mean, just crushes me, drives me into the turf in Houston, and my stunned decision-making process, I decided to punch him in the throat.
That seems like a reasonable response.
From on my back, right? And so I did. And it wasn't a very wise move because he grabbed my face mask with both his hands and started just to jackhammer my helmet and my back of my head down into the turf. And finally, I was just going, stop, stop.
I'm guessing in those days, didn't even draw a 15-yard penalty.
It did not.
Either one of them.
No.
No. Today, you'd be called into the commissioner's office at some point in time. Good stuff. What we've learned, I always do, and all kidding aside, I feel smarter every time we have Loggeman on. I learn a little more football each time, Jeff, so we definitely appreciate it. I know Jag fans do as well, but now I know if a guy's got you pinned on your back, probably not a bet.
The
good
throw
idea
punch
to, yeah,
is not the throw best
punch,
option.
No. The throw punch when you got nowhere to go. There's no escape route.
I learned to say to Bruce at that point, when he got a block like that, he said, great block.
Hey, sincerely, thank you for the helmet and the jersey. That was unexpected and phenomenal of you to bring in, so we really appreciate that. And as well, tonight, Jaguars Thursday, Gus Bradley going to join you and J.P. Shadrick. Pacelli out with the road tour down in Palm Coast tonight, so looking forward to we'll see you out there at practice. We appreciate you stopping by, and don't be a stranger this summer, all right?
And looking forward to our time together in the fall.
You know it. Jeff Loggeman will be a regular, weekly regular here as a co-host on Jaguars Today throughout football season. So just a little sample of what you've got coming up. Good stuff. You want to get in, 641-1010. We'll hear from Gus. We'll hear from Blake coming up next. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Tony, there's actually news from this date in football history. How about that?
Does it include the Jags? Because a year ago today is when they unveiled the plans for the new boards and everything.
Tony, this date in football history, 1 year ago today. And then it was, what's today, June 19th, 2013, the Jacksonville Jaguars unveiled plans
they
for
did.
New video boards.
And you can hear them every day out at practice.
They're banging away, man. I wonder what the load-bearing weight is of those concourses. People parking a lot of work trucks up on the walking concourses these days.
No, they are. Did you see, by the way, at the Maracanã down in Brazil yesterday where one of the matches was being played, they were showing the wooden staircase, basically, that they have virtually every fan in that building walking up, and as they're walking, it's waving side to side.
Not good.
I was like, I'm watching the video going, what are they doing? They have a VIP entrance that was apparently all concrete, but for the regular folk, the 80,000 that are really packing the place in, they're going up a wobbly wooden staircase.
Well, maybe not as many people died as the projections indicated in the building of these stadiums, and they
Holy
were trying to hit
cow.
Their number. I don't know. But what was it, the Chile fans,
yeah,
that stormed the stadium yesterday, like the ticketless fans that tried to get in? Did you see that?
Yeah,
they all rushed the entrance. And basically, there were like three volunteers there trying to stop over 1,000 people.
Well, you're not going to stop the soccer hooligans.
Good luck with that.
When that wave gets rolling, it's just going
to
roll.
Also, Tony, much further secondary to what happened 1 year ago with the announcement of the new video boards, in 1943, the Steagles were born. Philadelphia Eagles and the Pittsburgh Steelers merged for the 1943 season. Of course, you had World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Going on, you had most of the able-bodied players going on to serve in the military, and out of necessity, they combined the two teams, which is something that had been proposed earlier, a couple years earlier, to combine the two teams into the Pennsylvania Keystoners, I believe it was called, and then sell off the remaining franchise to Boston, mm-hmm. so they'd start a franchise there, but it never obviously came to pass. But you had to be... there were a few ways you could get out. If you were a father who supported a family with small children, you could get out of the draft. There were a couple ways to do it. Or you could be 4F, which basically you were disabled in some way or not physically capable of going into the military. So the Steagles had two players, a running back, I believe it was a running back, and a defensive end.
I thought it was a wide receiver.
Was it a wide receiver? That makes it even better. It was a wide receiver and a defensive end.
I thought you said it was their leading receiver.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. He caught 17 balls, their leading receiver, and Tony Bova, and he was blind in one eye and partially blind in the other eye, and another defensive end who had the same exact thing, blind in one eye, nearly legally blind in the other one. And the starting running back in their first game, John Butler, was ruled 4F a day before for poor eyesight and bad knees. Come on out and watch professional football, ladies and gentlemen.
Unreal.
Back in 1943, that's
and
what
that was
had.
At a time when really professional football hadn't taken that stranglehold on American culture anyway. I mean, it was a baseball-loving country. It was baseball and horse racing and boxing at that point in time. So football was kind of a secondary sport in a lot of ways, and they not only lost anybody that could have been considered a star, but now you're trying to continue with this product with a bunch of third- and fourth-rate football players out there on the field.
Well, history tells you that, you know, there's a lot of debate back then whether they should play professional sports during World War II, and Franklin Roosevelt famously said that baseball, because it was much more popular back then, was important to the national morale, and he wanted the game to continue to be played.
Yeah.
Didn't comment about football. There were a lot of professional football leagues back in the 40s. The NFL wasn't the only one. They may have been the preeminent one, but not nearly by the margin that they are today, for instance, not even close. And they were one of two leagues that decided, well, if baseball can play, there's another league out, the Pacific Coast Football League, something like that. And so basically, most of the NFL's competition went away overnight.
Yep.
They continued to play, continued to maintain that following, and then just picked right back up. And when guys came back from the war, they all naturally went back into the National Football League. And so most of the competition was wiped out at that point in time. So there you have it.
The Steagles.
Football. The Steagles were born. Best Fence Company brings you this state in football history. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price. Call the Best Fence Company at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. All right, let's get to what Gus Bradley along with Blake Bortles had to say after practice yesterday. Jacksonville Jaguars wrapping up their minicamp day two yesterday. Out on the practice field right now for about 90 more minutes, and they call it quits for the remainder of the summer until training camp kicks off. Gus, first of all, just talking about Blake Bortles getting the contract done.
I think it's awesome, you know, that he's done. I think, well, we have a couple more guys, so we'll see. Hopefully by training camp those guys are taken care of too.
And also yesterday, not a sharp practice, as we've already talked about today. I thought probably the worst offensive practice that the team has had, but again, it's June. It doesn't really matter how bad they were offensively yesterday, but he did talk about the team just not being as sharp.
Today, there were some spots that we weren't as sharp as we needed to be. 2 minute, some younger guys making mistakes, younger receivers lining up offside, false starts in the offensive line, you know, things like that, but we got to capture those things.
All right, Gus also asked about, I think, goals for Blake, things to work on between now and training camp. What do you want to see him work on, get better at in that period of time, which obviously they're not working with the team, although there is opportunity to do some, you know, conditioning here. They're not going to be out on the field practicing together. What does he want to see Blake improve on in that time period?
Really, just keep doing the things that he's doing. You know, the consistency. I think he's feeling more comfortable back there with the play calls and things. So just the consistency that he, you know, has to show week or day in and day out.
I you could study the playbook, Tony. I don't know how you can, you know, when you come back, I guess he's saying I want to see him continue to show the consistency and the improvement and not have a backslide. But you can't work on these things the way you can work on them in OTAs over the next 5 weeks or so.
No, you really can't. And I'm curious to see, you know, what it's going to look like when Blake is back and these guys finally get to put on the pads, and what it's going to look like when bullets are flying at some of these guys as opposed to basically the passing camp that we've been out to for the last 5 weeks, where they haven't been overly impressive. They've had days that were better than others, but it was never like, wow, you know, with what's going on with this offense, and part of that's the injuries and things they're working on.
Big part of that, I think.
Yeah. But again, going back to Blake, it's noticeable, and it was noticeable when he got here for the rookie minicamp, that the ball seemed to wobble when he threw those deep passes. A lot of people were concerned about it that week. He talked about he was working on footwork, and he reiterated that yesterday. We'll get to that in a moment. But Coach Bradley was asked to talk about Blake Bortles and those deep passes.
Well, there's a couple of them. You know, he had pressure on him, and, you know, he stepped up. I was going to blow the whistle early. But I think whenever, anytime you see a quarterback when they throw the ball in the dirt a couple times a week, we saw him earlier, and you see him in his workout, and he has 62 throws, and not one of them's in the dirt, and all of a sudden he comes here and does it. It's sometimes there's anxiety, and sometimes he's pressing and trying to do too many things. And we're just watching that, and he'll work through that. Some of the things, you know, he's got to work through.
It's interesting, again, to me. I mean, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I think it's fair to say Henny's probably his worst practices have come in the open practice sessions.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
And you hear Gus Bradley say, well, you know, it's probably a little bit of nerves and anxiety. You see, we know he can throw. We know he can make the throws. We see him in his workout before the draft. You know, he's hitting 59 out of 62 or whatever the number is that they all do. You know, the anxiety level doesn't get any smaller when there are 60,000 people out there, right?
No.
So let's hope this is just, as Jeff Logman said, you know, you're getting a lot of stuff thrown at you. You're kind of overwhelmed as a rookie, period. And being a rookie quarterback, having to learn the offense, having to lead the offense and do things like that can get a little bit daunting at times. So let's move on to what Blake had to say yesterday. First, in regards to his contract, did he feel it was just a relief to get it done?
You know, I guess. You know, to me it was kind of done when I got drafted. But, I mean, I guess today to officially sign and, you know, to be able to put that in the past and come out here, I guess is kind of the last piece of the puzzle to the whole draft process.
He's certainly right about the fact that the climate has changed. Much like the NBA now, you expect these guys to all get done in rapid fashion. In fact, the fact that Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson are not done, a little bit more of a surprise than the fact that Blake Bortles is done at this point in time. But as I stood there yesterday, Tony, thinking, all right, guaranteed $20.6 million, $13 million signing bonus, how many of the assembled media combined will it take in our lifetimes to make that $20.6 million? I mean, you probably take care of the 20, but how many of the rest of us would it take to combine for the 0.6? The numbers.
The answer is all of us.
Might have been
plus,
all of us.
Plus.
Although they had a couple of national reporters in yesterday. I don't know what they're pulling down.
Yeah, maybe they get a little bit more money. But look, Blake talked yesterday too, and we talked about the honesty that he showed during that press conference. Look, it wasn't a good day for him, and he was asked after practice, what did he think of his throws?
You know, it was all right. It wasn't a great day. You know, I thought there was things that I didn't do very well, but that's part of it. You know, it's not a 2 or 3 or 4 week process. You know, it's a long process, a long journey. You know, I need to keep learning, getting better, you know, asking Chad questions. So definitely have a lot to improve and work on.
A couple last ones here from Blake Bortles. Asked what he thought about, again, his throwing, but as well his decision-making, just where he is in the whole process.
Average, definitely I think average. You know, stuff. I'm working on a lot of things. I'm working on a lot of footwork stuff, so there's things that I'm not doing well right now, but I'm not worrying about it because I'm trying to fix something else. So, you know, it is a process. You know, it's something that me and Frank are working on that's going to take a while. So, you know, I'll continue to improve and work hard.
And again, to me, in that circumstance, whereas as Logman, I think he referred to it, or maybe it was you, Tony, just basically a passing camp. That's what it is. I mean, that's because there's no contact. You're trying to install the offense and defense and things like that. But those are the most readily apparent things. It's set up for the passing game to thrive in these circumstances. And when you're average in that setting, that's a bad day, basically.
No, it is a bad day. And it is interesting when they brought this guy in, they drafted him, they talked about the things they were going to have to work on with Blake Bortles. And what he sounded like yesterday, Mike, is a guy that is very comfortable with what his role is right now. He sounds and looks like a guy that he's not preparing as if he needs to be ready for opening day. He's preparing as in, I need to be ready to be a better Blake Bortles tomorrow. And whatever's going to come with that is what's going to come with it. Because the team has taken that burden off his shoulders, and he's carrying himself like a guy that, look, there's not a lot of pressure on Blake yet. There will be pressure on Blake Bortles at some point in this training camp and probably through preseason, but it's not on him right now, and I think that can only help him in his development. He was also asked yesterday to talk about, we asked Coach about it, we also asked Blake Bortles about the flutter on those deep balls.
Yeah, and that's something that's not what we're working on right now. But, I mean, that's definitely something that will be worked on in the future and something that, you know, will be addressed, you know, in July and going into camp.
All right, there you go. Blake Bortles a little bit after practice yesterday. The last you'll hear from him for the most part until hopefully we catch up with him next week.
Yeah.
As some of the rookies will be sticking around. Rookies tomorrow working with the camps or with the kids. Camp tomorrow. Your entire family, it's $5. So if you have a bunch of kids that are into football, it's a great opportunity to come out. All the details is with everything by going to Jaguars.com. You can get all the full details there. Final day of minicamp, obviously not open to the public today. So we'll get a chance to get out there on the practice field. Less than 90 minutes to go before they break for the summer, and I think as much for the coaches as for the players, just want a little bit of a downtime right now, so they'll get that chance to get that coming up here shortly. When we return, we'll take a look at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, where we asked you today, in addition to Jason Babin, who are other veterans that may be on the roster bubble? Give us a guy you think may be a surprise cut, a veteran. Maybe not a surprise so much. It might not have been a surprise to a lot of people that Babin got cut, but I think name recognition-wise and the fact that he led the team in sacks caught some people a little bit off guard this morning. So we'll share with you some of the responses we received on that, and you can still get in at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony live from Everbank Field. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
No woman, no cry.
Very nice. Oh, no, that's right. For some reason, I was thinking go. That doesn't make sense. Very nice. Quick hitter from Fat Tony today. Congratulations, former Jacksonville son Clayton Kershaw.
I know.
His first career no-hitter. And did not realize it was just a Hanley Ramirez error that cost him perfection potentially last night.
Yeah, well, you're welcome.
Strikeouts and look, 22 no-hitters in Dodgers history. I saw this stat earlier. Vince Scully has called 19.
He's been around for a long time.
That's crazy.
I watched Jerry Royce throw one of those no-hitters back in the 80s. I want to say maybe against Houston. And first inning, like nobody on, one out, ground ball to Bill Russell at short. I mean, just, you know, fielded that one a billion times. Threw it in the dirt or the turf.
Play shortstop.
Not that Bill Russell. threw it away, and guy reaches out in there and would go on to be the only guy to get on base. You know, you just don't know at the time that perfection is spoiled sometimes in the early stages. Today, the Jaguars in a pursuit of a perfect 53-man roster. Segue alert right there. And they released Jason Babin.
Yeah.
Led the team in sacks last year. So today we asked the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight to name a veteran player that you think may be a surprise cut or a cut, you know, something that would be deemed as a surprise to some before the regular season. Tony, what kind of response did we get on Twitter?
Here we go. From Sean, I got Tyson Alualu, hashtag Jaguars.
Saw that a few times today. I don't think that will be the case, by the way.
From I don't know. It's Tyson Alualu, again, hashtag Jaguars Today. From Dr. G, we got Chris Przinski, hashtag Jaguars Today, and a lot of the fan base would probably go, all right.
Like, a lot of people voting for Chris Przinski on this.
I'm not sure that one would be much of a surprise. And finally on Twitter here from Hudson, we got, it's his birthday, feel bad about it, but Will Taufo'o, I believe that's even how you say it.
Look, Gus calls him Will T. That's good enough for me.
He's going to be beat by Brady Ewing at fullback, hashtag Jaguars Today.
By the way, not a fullback, but Bo Blankenship continues to
look
good, doesn't he? He just looks quick, low to the ground, and does not waste a whole lot of time getting it from first to fourth gear.
He does not.
Whatever he's got as far as that top-end speed goes, he finds it quickly. He's a quick accelerator out there on the
and Will is often field. One of those guys you hear playing ping pong in the background on the interviews in the locker room. He's
on the all pong team.
Yeah, he enjoys playing a little
bit. Here's let's see, a sampling from the Facebook side of things. George Wyrick, who we met yesterday, shouted us down with the hashtag Jaguars Today. Says, I'm saying Tyson Alualu, not to say he isn't a nice guy, but don't think he is what the team is wanting to carry over from the old regime. I think the one thing they really like about Tyson Alualu, your current Jaguar career sack leader, by the way, as we pointed out earlier today. 11.5, was that the number?
11.
11.
11 is
give him a little too much credit.
It's the mark, guys.
11 right now.
To
be
12.
Among the current players on this roster. I just think they like his versatility. They can play him at a lot of different spots, you know, and I think they feel like, you know, he doesn't need to be a big pass rusher. He can hold up against the run. He can play. He can move inside. He can play that Red Bryant position. You know, that run stopping defensive end as part of a rotation. So I would be surprised if Tyson Alualu is not part of this football team. Let's see another one for Przinski. This one from Joel Swan. Oh wait, did you say surprise or hopeful? Hashtag Jaguars Today. So they're all down on Chris Przinski, who does bring value on special teams. And that gets overlooked by not only by the average fan, but I think the media overlooks that as well from time to time. And among the leaders in special teams tackles out there, he is a guy who can run. Is he great in coverage? Clearly not. But we'll see. I don't think it would be a stunner to see Pruszynski let go. I think he's one of these guys that, probably the majority of the roster fighting for the roster spot. We'd say the majority of the 90-man roster certainly is fighting for a spot.
Yeah, I would say so.
Gus singled out, again, Jock McClendon and Brandon Linder in that battle yesterday. McClendon continues to get first-team reps at the right guard position. Linder's had a few, but just highlighting that as one battle that you could almost see that going down to the final preseason game for somebody to grab that spot. I'm sure they'd like Linder to take that spot, and if he gets beat out, I've heard nothing to indicate that Brandon Linder has been anything but what they expected when they drafted him, traded up to draft him in the third round. So if McClendon beats him out, I'll take that for now as a good sign that McClendon stepped up his game this offseason.
No doubt about it. I mean, yeah, this team, this roster should still be competitive, and you kind of figure these things out by, look, we've been talking about wide receiver and the opportunities those guys have been given here for the last 2 weeks with all the injuries they've had, and it is guys like Damian Copeland and Allen Hurns and these types of players that are being given opportunities that they wouldn't be given maybe in a lot of other places in the National Football League because of the competition still, especially on the bottom half of this roster. And I think cutting a guy as accomplished in the league as Jason Babin is, coming off a 7.5 sack year, tells you just how competitive this roster has become in just the last 2 years. That's not a cut this team could have afforded to make in the last two seasons. They can afford to now because of the depth they feel like they have and the competition they have on this roster.
And, again, with no personality conflicts, any of that, it's not like he was a guy that needed to perform exceptionally well as opposed to anyone else because he was a pain in the ass to get along with. As Loggeman pointed out, had that reputation in Philadelphia as a me-first guy, cared more about himself, whether that reputation was accurate or not, it didn't carry over, certainly once Gus Bradley was here in Jacksonville, and that's just the magical powers of Gus. They say you go to the Patriots and they wash you clean, right? Mm. Well, it didn't work for Aaron Hernandez, obviously.
No.
Little did we know just how dirty he was, but that's kind of the idea. I think you come to get baptized in the fervor that is Gus Bradley's passion for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and certainly it did well with Jason Babin in terms of how he fit in with this football team. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you daily by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, including Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. You can visit TomBush.com and get more information when you're in the market for your next new or pre-owned vehicle. And, of course, follow them on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors as well. Tony, getting ready to wrap up. Appreciate Jeff Loggeman as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. He brought me the helmet, the game used helmet. I guarantee you, if I could afford a DNA test, I would find out whose blood is on that helmet. Because there's someone's blood on the E in Jets on that Jeff Loggeman helmet.
There's something there. Yeah.
It's very cool. And the jersey as well. That was spectacular. Look at Tony's Twitter timeline. And my red face, which is, I've got that ruddy Irish complexion, I'll go with. And it's amazing I don't have high blood pressure. As much as I stress out from time to time, it looks like I'm perpetually with the high blood pressure because my face is always so red. Try to squeeze it into that helmet, and it's about 5 shades of red darker than it typically is. And Loggeman's not a small dude, but I don't know how tight they wear those things in the NFL, but I think I need the next size up, please, Tony. Richard Cranium was not getting his cranium in there comfortably.
Yeah, but it was a little tight there.
Yeah, it was a little bit. Didn't get a chance to really get into this today. Maybe we'll talk more about it tomorrow. See the story about Terry Bradshaw. People are ticked off up in Pittsburgh because he didn't show up to Chuck Knoll's viewing, funeral, any of that stuff. Didn't contact his widow either. It's something I'd like to talk a little bit about tomorrow because Terry Bradshaw talked, I don't want to say glowingly about Knoll. They never got along, but they had a strained relationship at best, I think, particularly post-career. And Bradshaw gave him a lot of credit for, traits he helped develop in him, toughness being one of them.
Sure.
But they were not best buds, and he's getting crushed for it because he was actually in Pittsburgh, was the irony of it, performing a one-man show. Terry Bradshaw, a man of stage and screen, as we all know, and, of course, a one-time country singer as well.
Yep.
But we'll get into that maybe a little bit tomorrow. Some open phone lines for you throughout the program tomorrow as we wrap up our final thoughts on OTAs, minicamp, and the like. Guys out in the practice field hopefully avoiding the injury bug for another hour plus as we get ready to send those guys off into the long, hot summer. So that'll do it for us today. Thanks to all of you out there. For Jeff Loggeman, who joined us earlier, catch him tonight again. Jaguars Thursday at 6 o'clock here on 1010XL. J.P. Shadrick hosts along with Jeff. They'll have Gus Bradley on live at the beginning of the program right at 6 o'clock tonight on 1010XL. Tony Baselli will check in from the team ticket caravan that'll be down in Palm Coast later on today. So stop by the Publix down there in Palm Coast as well from 6 to 7:30 tonight. And you can meet Baselli and the crew. Roar cheerleaders will be on hand. All that good stuff. All the details can always be found by navigating through Jaguars.com. So for all the aforementioned, thanks to Joe Fortunato, Lauren Brooks. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We got XL Primetime coming up next. Joe C., Hacker, and T-Wig right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.